All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free For All. I am your host, Big John, and have a very interesting guest for us tonight. And we're going to be talking about Javier Milei, the politician that every libertarian, especially here in the U.S., other libertarians like to look up to and say, that's our guy. That's our first guy to get into office who's doing what he says, taking an axe to big government, and trying to get rid of the statist authoritarianism. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. My guest tonight, and to be honest, guys, let me put on some glasses because I'm a little old. I want to be able to read his bio, make sure I got it right. Joining me tonight is Chris Baker. He's a longtime libertarian activist who also lives in Austin, Texas. He's the author of Escape from the Village, which is available on Amazon.com. And he's also the host of the Fountainhead Forum, a show dedicated to discussing many important topics that are key to living a great life, which I assume part of that would be libertarianism. The Fountainhead Forum can be found on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, and X. And Chris, I believe, also has a Substack for the Fountainhead Forum. Everyone, welcome Chris Baker. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Hi, John. It's nice to be here. You know, I just got back from the Round Rock Bitcoiners meetup, so...
There you go. Excellent.
Documentary. Yeah, it's
that's fantastic.
And we're 1 day after or 2 days after Milei's 1 year anniversary. So
yeah, so actually this is a great anniversary to stop and take sort of stock of what's been happening in Argentina. Let's assess a little bit to the extent that we can whether Milei's reforms, A, if he's sticking to the plan, B, how his reforms have fared thus far. And 1 year isn't necessarily a real long time to judge an administration of any sort, but I think we can start to at least get some inferences about stuff. So let's start off with this, Chris. You know, folks, Chris reached out to me and he says, I'd love to come on Free For All to talk about Javier Milei. And I said, absolutely. You were reading my mind. It's a good thing. So Chris, let's start off with the general question. Javier Milei, let's start off with a little bit softball here. Milei, what kind of libertarian is he, and why are people so excited that he got elected to begin with?
He seems to be very cosmopolitan among libertarians. It seems like he's read a lot of different people. So I wouldn't necessarily say he has one particular guru or person that he really follows. He's mentioned Israel Kirzner. He's mentioned Alberto Benegas Lynch. He's mentioned Hoppe. He's mentioned Philip Baggus. He's mentioned Walter Block. He's certainly mentioned Mises. He's mentioned Hoppe. He's mentioned Rothbard. He did learn, you know, some things from the monetarists like Milton Friedman. So there's real. Sounds like he just reads a lot, which is impressive. But
well, he is an economics professor, right?
Yes, he started out with economics. Yeah, he came to this through the economics area. But unlike most of our wonderful economists, he really knows how to talk to the regular person in the street. And he's able to simplify things. And I think the most important factor here is that he has made himself cool and hip.
Yes.
He has a 70% approval rating with Argentines under 30. They lowered the voting age to 16 because the socialists thought this would help them. That backfired on them, and they all voted for Milei. Most of them voted for Milei. It's really remarkable what this guy is doing. It can be replicated, but you've got to find the right person who can do the replicating.
Right. And for folks that may not be as familiar, a lot of people here in America have likened Milei to Donald Trump. Now, to me, that's always been both interesting and flawed as a comparison. Right, Chris? I don't know how you feel about it. Certainly, Milei does share that populist sort of showmanship, the theatrics of a Donald Trump, the ability to talk at a level. In some cases, people say, well, you know, Trump talks at a fourth or fifth grade level. But guess what? That's the reading comprehension level of the population of the U.S. right now. That's the majority of folks, right? Milei had that showmanship, right? Like, famously, he would walk around with a chainsaw saying he was going to cut government in half, et cetera, et cetera. Talk to me a little bit about that comparison. In your opinion, is it a valid comparison? Tell me in which ways yes, which ways no, to say, hey, Trump and Milei are really the same sort of politician.
I will go over the many reasons why it's not a valid comparison. Milei's father was a bus driver. Trump was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. So the fact that you've actually grown up with the people who aren't doing well means you understand them.
Right.
Trump has no consistent ideology. Milei does seem to have a consistent ideology. He knows this stuff. To his credit, Trump did say that he was my favorite president, which was a good thing to do. I hope that's the most positive thing I can say about Trump. Milei, he also is a. I don't think Trump has the youth appeal that Milei does. I mean, Milei walks into an event wearing a black leather jacket where everybody else has suits, and right. he's able to do that. The knowledge, the fact that Trump, the Milei's, you know, been in an academic environment, but I think also Milei is much more focused on what he's for. Trump, I don't know. Again, Trump, Trump just seems to do things that piss off the left on purpose, and that's his whole shtick, and it works.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Milei does often talk about what he calls La Casta, which is the caste. They often say La Casta tiene miedo, which is the caste has fear. Mm-hmm. But Milei will. I think Milei really likes people. I don't know where Trump fits into that. Milei seems like the kind of guy who would have been able to hang around with any crowd in high school, and he would have been popular with them. He was the lead singer of a Rolling Stone cover band. He was a soccer goalie. I mean, that's one thing I've said about the Libertarian Party here in America is we need to find more people who are lead singers of rock bands. It's
punk rock bands. If I had my vote, punk rock bands. But
yeah, well, his was a Rolling Stone cover band. So yeah, one thing I've been searching for, I have never. If anybody has video out there of Milei with his band, I would love to see that.
Yeah. Who knows if they got anything captured on video, but.
And Milei is younger. I don't think, when you're still in your 50s, you can still kind of look cool to the young kids. There's a lot of factors here. The campaign has been very grassroots. They didn't spend a lot of money. I don't know if they spent any money or it was just all volunteers doing stuff, kids making memes, all kinds of stuff. It's a remarkable phenomena. And it seems like Milei is really becoming a popular figure just all over South America, not just Argentina.
Well, he is a look, I'm no Trump supporter at all. I've been accused by my partner here at Grumblings Media of having TDS, which is a nice catch-all ad hominem attack on me. But look, the truth of the matter is, I'm a New Yorker, native New Yorker. I grew up with Trump in the news every day. As little as I think about Trump, the politician, or Trump, the businessman, I will say he is a very, he can be a very charming individual. He does have appeal to people that logically he shouldn't have appeal to, right? Like you said, he's always been a silver spoon kid. He's never had to really, quote unquote, suffer the pains of the common man. Yet the common man in this country flocks to Trump. And I think that's where both Milei and Trump have expressed admiration of each other, right? Where they say, where Milei will say, hey, I like this Trump guy. I've seen some quotes from him. Now, I don't speak Spanish or Portuguese myself, but the translations I've seen have indicated that he is sort of, if not an admirer of Trump, certainly someone that he sees Trump and says, hey, I see where this guy's appeal is. But I agree with you that politically they couldn't be further apart. Now, having said that, Milei has, from what I've seen, and I caught most, if not all, of the Lex Fridman interview he did recently, he likes to say that I'm an anarchist that the world has forced into being a minarchist when he entered office. Do you agree with that assessment of his self-assessment of his politics, of his libertarianism right now?
Well, it's often a question of how do we get there from here? I mean, I sometimes wonder if we'll ever can truly have anarchy, which literally means without rulers. It doesn't mean without rules.
Correct.
But, you know, it does seem like he was, you know, we're often forced to get involved with this because I think we'd rather do other things, but every once in a while something just falls into our lap. And I don't think you can avoid politics. I mean, especially after what happened with the nonsense of 2020, which certainly is a, you know, so in a way, I think we are kind of for, because, you know, what happens when you have anarchy? It's, or what happens when you have no rulers? I think anarchy is possible, but I think it requires a certain subsection of people. I mean, it probably isn't going to happen until we go to another planet. You know, it's and you know, getting back to the Corona stuff, Argentina was probably as bad as any place from what I hear, although there are so many terrible places it was hard to say, and so many places that were worse than America. But back in October, the equivalent of Anthony Fauci died, and Milei gave a short speech and called him hijo de puta. Translates to son of whore. So Milei will say some really rude things, but I think he does it. He doesn't do it too much, but he does it, you know, every once in a while because it gets attention and it still has its shock value. Because if you say things like that too much, you lose your shock value. But
right.
And, you know, I get the impression that Milei really likes people because for a while he was actually flying on regular airlines. And people would get up and want to take photos with him, and he'd let him do it. He'd do that to all the public, you know. And there's one video where the pilot comes out and says, "President Milei, can you sit down? We got to take off." You know, it's like,
You know, well, and like again, he kind of strikes me as someone who, like, clearly he's an intelligent man. Like when you hear him speak about his philosophical base and his economic learnings, and a voracious reader. He's clearly, like, you can't compare his intelligence with Trump's. Trump's is like you said, he has no clear ideology. His ideology seems to be, as you said, piss off the libs, own the libs, and that seems to be how he progresses forward. Milei, on the other hand, does have these strong beliefs. Now, I would think, and Chris, I don't know if you identify as an ANCAP, anarchist, minarchist, classical liberal. I'm not quite sure where you fall on the spectrum, or Do you care to, just for the sake of the discussion, give me a quick definition of your beliefs?
Sometimes my beliefs aren't necessarily consistent. I mean, I'm certainly a libertarian, but whether or not I'm an ANCAP or an anarchist, I mean, it kind of depends on what mood I'm in, because it's so weird watching the political landscape change. You know, because of Milei's background as a singer and, you know, in a Rolling Stone cover
band. He's a showman.
I now said, you know, we've got to get rid of the term classical liberal. And now I've decided, okay, we're going to call it rock star liberalism.
Okay.
You know, which again, it sounds a lot cooler than classical liberal, which really is just like saying, oh, right. I'm a has-been liberal. I mean, yeah, nobody really cares much about what a has-been has to say. So,
right.
We're rock star liberals.
We're rock star liberals. Okay. Fair enough. But, the reason I ask that is because, you know, here you have always the political conundrum, which the Libertarian Party and certainly a lot of the more vociferous anarchists have, is like, how can you use the system to bring down the system, right? So, like, it's a self-contradiction when you say I'm an anarchist politician, right? The people have a tough time believing that, as do I, by the way. That's why I've never defined myself as an anarchist. I don't necessarily object to the philosophy. I just think we're not getting there anytime soon or ever, quite honestly, on any large scale. But it's interesting to me that Milei has chosen to say, like, I'm a Mises guy, I'm a Rothbardian guy, Hoppe, Block, cool. But you know what? Milton Friedman has his uses, you know, Hayek has his uses. And he seems to straddle that line, but it's very clear that he wants to just reduce government, right? He, yeah. That's been his whole thing. Afuera, of course, his trademark, sort of battle cry. How do you assess what he's done, right? Because I think there's been a lot of good in there, but it's not all, what's it called, the wine and roses coming out of Argentina, right? Or do you think I've misstated that?
Well, you know, if you imagine you've got a, you know, a patient who's got emphysema and stage four stomach cancer, and they're 450 pounds overweight, and then a year later you've got a patient who the emphysema is gone, the cancer is in remission, but they're still maybe 400 pounds overweight, you would call that progress. So
yes.
I think he was in an absolutely horrible situation. The peso has basically stabilized for the year. It's, I mean, inflation's not at zero, but a year ago it was 1% a day, you know, I think at the beginning of 2023, you could get 400 pesos for a dollar. And at the end of the year, you could get 900.
Well, so, yeah. Inflation, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm looking to give the exact numbers here. Inflation used to be like it had reached a high of several hundred thousand percent.
Yeah.
But the monthly inflation rate in November 2024 reached 2.4%, which is the lowest since July 2020. So it's the lowest it's been on a monthly level in 4 years. Now, the monthly inflation rate dropping to 2.4%. The annual rate is still near 200%. But as you said, that figure was even higher than that. So he's done a great job taming inflation. Of course, he's cut the governmental. I mean, talk about like what Musk and Ramaswamy want to do with Doge. You know, they have a fake agency where they claim they're going to do all this stuff. Milei actually got into office and he's managed to do, let me read some of these numbers, Chris, reduced federal spending by 30% year over year in real terms. He's implemented 74% cuts to infrastructure, 52% cuts to education, 60% cut to social development, 28% cut to healthcare, 68% cut to federal assistance to the individual provinces or, you know, what we would think of as states. He's frozen all public work projects. He suspended all ongoing infrastructure initiatives. He's cut energy and transportation subsidies. He's living the libertarian dream in terms of spending, right? And getting inflation under control. So do we give him, you think he's gone far enough? Do you think he needs to go more? Where do you think this plays, A, realistically, and B, politically?
You know, I certainly think he's done a good job. I mean, I'd like to see him go further, you know, but you know, you can't tear down the Empire State Building in a day.
Right.
I mean, it's just like you can't tear down the government in a day. What he's torn down has been pretty phenomenal, you know, and this includes some other things, you know. He, for example, said that all these work at home employees had to come into the office. Well, guess what happens when you do that is a bunch of them end up quitting because they weren't doing anything anyway. They were actually giving out free college to immigrants. He's cut that. You know, yeah, this is the one, the most effective. Yeah, if you're going to complain about immigrants, this is what you do is you stop giving them stuff and you end up having less immigrants. But guess what? They do have immigrants. For example, the Venezuelan immigrants love Milei and he loves them. You can see one picture of him holding up a Venezuelan flag. I mean, cutting back on these programs. Yeah, it's, you know, I think we're now, you know, every month has been a budget surplus now. So yeah, he's cutting a lot. I think he'll continue to cut back on some things. It's, you know, what to keep in mind is he's doing most of what he can as an executive. He still has the La Libertad Avanza still has a very small section of both houses of the, of the Congress. So there's only so much he can do. He does have to throw some bones to some of the more conservatives. And of course he had to bring Patricia Bullrich onto his cabinet because after Patricia Bullrich endorsed him and she was as hostile toward Milei earlier in the election as anybody. And then suddenly, oh, it's suddenly, you know, how they're fighting to the death and then they become friends. But there's been a lot of progress here. You know, I'm happy. I still have some questions about why his chancellor, Deanna Mondino, you know, was quit or was fired. But other than that, I'm seeing a lot of progress here. And, you know, I don't think Americans would ever know what it's like to experience this kind of inflation. Right. And, you know, really, I think that if cutting inflation is probably, I mean, people are worried about their jobs. But that's the thing that probably is more painful for people than anybody is just, you know, inflation, especially when it's that bad.
Well, when it's that high, yeah, like literally the it's what caused Nazi Germany to come to power is the hyperinflation in the 20s and 30s following World War One. And in Argentina, you know, it was the type of thing in a lot of these Latin American countries. Chile had it for a while as well. When you have this hyperinflation, literally the fiat you hold in your hand literally gets cut in half almost every day, right? So I think it was in Nicaragua at one point in the 80s, inflation was so bad that they couldn't even afford to print the paper money, that you would just take your 100 peso note in there and they would just stamp a zero at the end of it, right? Because they couldn't even afford to do the paper. So when you think of Americans, you're right, have never experienced this type of inflation. And then some other things I want to throw in that you say he's done good. The number of cabinets, like their equivalent of our departments, federal departments, reduced from 18 to 8, so more than half afuera. And he's eliminated the ministries, including education, labor, science and technology, environment, culture, women, gender and diversity ministries, all gone. Any agencies addressing discrimination issues and indigenous rights, INADI, that got cut down. 30,000 state jobs eliminated through non-renewal of contracts, firings, early retirements. He's announced plans to lay off an additional 50,000 state workers, this past summer, and overall reduce the federal workforce by nearly 10% since taking office. People forget, in a lot of states in this country, in the U.S., the number one employer is the government. So we face the same thing. Now, to be fair, Chris, there are some things that, like you said, like the patient example you gave, some of the things that, he did get a budget surplus, first budget surplus in 12 years. GDP is projected to grow at between 5% and 6% in 2025. So these are good things. But here's the problem. You still have very high unemployment. Over 50% of Argentinians live in below the poverty line, I should say. 52% live below the poverty line. And that number, by most metrics, has gone up since Milei took office. Now, I'm a big believer in the free market, as I'm sure you are. But when faced with the political reality of half your population is below the poverty line, all your economic theories, of which he has many, of course, about the free market, eventually, you know, it's a tide that lifts all boats, and, you know, cutting government expenses is going to bring down inflation. So goods and services are more affordable. It's not a hidden tax, right? But there is the reality that over half of his people are below the poverty line. Unemployment, I think, is over 20% right now, right? So do you think he could continue on this path before the people start grumbling and sort of revolutionary fervor again?
Well, again, things were worse off, you know, before he took office. I mean, you know, I can add a few other things too. You know, I thought this was kind of funny. He canceled Alberto Fernandez's security detail. I mean, he was going to have, you know, Secret Service protection. He said, no, you're not getting it. That was the outgoing president. I mean, things were bad. I mean, his ratings are actually higher. I think if it ran now, he'd have a good chance of getting reelected. And I think he'll probably, in the next year's elections, I think La Libertad Avanza will probably get more seats in the Congress. So things are definitely, I would say things are definitely better off. He's looking to privatize the airlines. He's looking to, and cutting back on, some other programs. They're also enforcing things against the, there was a big problem, of just protesters blocking traffic every day. They've basically come down hard on that. One thing about Buenos Aires, there are lots of public squares and parks where you can go protest without blocking traffic. So he's really, I think he's cutting just everything he can cut. He cut that ministry of women. He's ended the disbursements. He got rid of the rent control. So I believe it's actually gotten easier to find a place to live now.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, he did eliminate all rent controls, and they actually have increased housing, and the average cost of housing has declined, like most libertarians and even some conservative Republicans. I mean, I remember going back to Jack Kemp would always advocate for that. And of course, that is a market function that has been proven over and over again. Do you think, though, that he will be able, like, to your point, I think the numbers I saw was that he has an overall 61% approval rate, which is, in the face of all this austerity and all these cuts, frankly, to me, is amazing. But do you think he can maintain this momentum? And like you said, it's not just a matter of his will. Like, much like if we ever had a libertarian president, if Rothbard himself came back from the dead and got into the Oval Office here, there's only going to be a limited amount of things he can do, right? Given the structure of our republic. So same thing with him. He's got the bully pulpit down there right now. But his political party is a minority party. Do you think he could continue to sort of be this heavy-handed to get his reforms in place over the next year? Do you think he could continue with this good work?
I think he can, as long as he has the public behind him, and they seem to be behind him. And the most important thing is I think he's actually achieving a philosophical re-education of the country, which is so desperately needed. And for that reason alone, I hope that this can spread around to the other countries in South America. He really knows how to get people on board with his program. He knows how to use analogies to simplify things for people. He's a great speaker. I mean, I've done 62 shows about Milei. Sometimes one show will just be, I'll get with somebody and we'll just sit down and watch a speech and comment on the speech.
Right.
We put the subtitles up and, it's just, I don't know how his English is. If he is fluent in English, he could make a fortune as a speaker at this point.
I don't think he is, because in that Lex Friedman interview, he needed a translator, right? So they had a live translator. Yeah. So I don't know if it's that good yet, but he's getting there.
Yeah. But he's already getting interviews. He's getting so much attention. I mean, I've compared him to, obviously, not the same ideology, but I think a comparison to Lenin is fair. I mean, this is the democratic capitalist equivalent of the Bolshevik Revolution. Being elected like this, and this might be the first time of democracy getting close to suicide and then fixing itself. It's kind of miraculous when you think about it, because
it is. But you know what it is, Chris, if you don't mind, it's the idea that people will go to extremes when they're desperate, right? That's how socialism takes root. That's how communism takes root, aside from the physical force and coercion, right? But people get desperate. And we have a comment. I just want to bring this up. It was to your comment below about Venezuelans. Linda says, gentlemen, regarding Venezuelan immigrants that love him, that's because Venezuelans there, meaning in Argentina, have fled socialism. Yeah, that's, I think, we're saying, right?
Shit, Sherlock. Yeah.
Yeah, like that. You're right. These poor people that have lived, that's why also in this country, to be honest with you, I don't share the so-called libertarian nationalist view, again, an oxymoron is if I've ever heard one, that like really is joining in the anti-immigrant fervor here. And I'm not even making a distinction between legal and illegal. I think you want people who have suffered, poor people who have suffered under these freaking totalitarian regimes, like really bad regimes, socialist, communist, that come here, who really do appreciate the understanding of freedom. As flawed as freedom is in this country, it's as incomplete as it is, it's still degrees better than their home countries. You know, my parents fled a communist regime after World War II to come here. So I'm sure those Venezuelans that have emigrated to Argentina, they'll end up being the best Argentinians possible because they're going there under Milei's libertarian vision. And I would think, as you said, holding up the Venezuelan flag, saying he loves those people, they're going to be the best Argentinian citizens, naturalized citizens. And on top of that, Chris, I think they're the next generation of Milei's. They're the next generation of libertarians who are going to adopt that philosophy. And they'll be telling their kids, hey, we used to live under an iron boot until we came here. And we were part of this libertarian revolution here. And I think that's another plus for saying, let's get those immigrants in here that actually want to come here. Because like you said, they're not going there for benefits because there are none anymore. The people who are going there are going for a true shot at a free market, shot at freedom and at prosperity. Do you agree?
Yeah, that's what they're going there for. And of course, when you get a welfare state that hardly gives you anything worthwhile anyway, people don't care about uprooting it. It's really, sometimes, you know, there's a special kind of incompetence that just seems to hit South America or even Latin America. And it just beats it. And it's just, you know, so much worse than anything here. And if you have a healthy culture, you'll attract immigrants that make your culture better. But if your culture is sick, you'll attract immigrants that just kill your culture. And we've killed our culture here. So that's on us. I think this hatred of immigrants is just people who don't want to blame themselves for their country's problems. Not to mention, you only need to be a resident in Argentina for 2 years to apply for citizenship. So this is not legal advice. It's not citizenship advice, but certainly, you know, it's one of the easier states to go to. I know one guy, his wife is from Argentina, so he's actually looking into getting citizenship. You know, so if you think about that, it's something to look into. Not to mention, you know, Airbnbs are pretty cheap and you can still get around a lot just on Ubers and stuff. So you don't need a car. Buenos Aires is an immaculate city. I mean, somebody once described it to me as Paris on steroids, and beautiful architecture, very majestic, looks very Victorian. It just seems like a really proud city, and I remember in some of the neighborhoods, I would go into a Starbucks and maybe get a cup of tea or something, and then I could just go to the bathroom. It was so wild because even in Austin, I'll have to get a key card or something because they do this to keep homeless people out of the bathrooms, and I don't have to worry about it down there.
Right, right.
The economy is actually a lot dollar-based already. A lot of major purchases will be in dollars. I went down there and I took $51 bills, so I had tips to give in dollars because people would appreciate that. So because people don't understand, when you have inflation and stuff, there's no credit. You have to, you know, buy your house with the money you have now. There are no mortgages. There are no car plans. You want a car, you go pay for it all now. It messes things up big time. But that
also is one of the things, yeah, Chris, that he hasn't yet accomplished, right? He wanted to, in essence, dollarize the Argentinian economy, and he hasn't been able to do that. Do you think that's that he pulled back on that effort, seeing that perhaps it was too disruptive, too austere for that economy? Or do you feel that there was pushback from within the government saying, hey, we can't do this right now?
I think you'd have to have some congressional approval, you know, and not to mention that's not a lot of these things aren't as easy as they say they are, because one of the obstacles to libertarian policies coming in is because often they will create some short term pain, but the benefits will be long term, whereas socialism often gives you nice quickie benefits, but the pain is long term. He's managed to, you know, implement libertarian policies really without pain, or at least, you know, the pain was already there, so nobody really notices. It's So he has, you know, basically said that you can use anything to conduct business with. You can conduct business in dollars. You can conduct business in Bitcoin. You could conduct business in Swiss francs. You could conduct businesses in one of the other seven pesos. Of course, every peso is a shit coin anyway, but you know,
Very quickly, I wanted to correct myself. I'm looking over my notes. I incorrectly said the unemployment rate was over 20%. It's actually 7.7% unemployment rate right now. But it still is increased since he took office, was the point. Chris, one of the things about Milei that I've seen on Twitter, you know, I get trolled by libertarians of every stripe, is some of the more militant U.S. libertarians seem to hold it against Milei that he seems to be an ardent supporter of Israel. Do you view that as a plus, minus, neutral? Now, now correct me if I'm wrong. Milei did convert to Judaism, correct?
I'm not sure where exactly that's happened right now. It's not something that I've paid that much attention to. You know, there was the first presidential debate was actually on October 8th last year, which was, of course, was the day after. And four of the five candidates came out and said, I stand with Israel. And the only one who didn't was Miriam Bregman, who is an outright communist. Yes. And they do have some people who are outright communists down there.
He's
also Jewish, by the way. But yeah. So that was and I've often said Argentina's military is really a non-factor. They don't really have the ability to get involved with anything. So, I mean, you know, while he may say, yeah, I stand with Israel, I don't know what he's actually going to do about it. He's definitely very much trying to be friendly to the U.S., though.
Without a doubt, yeah.
Which is for better or for worse. I do think a lot of the libertarians around the world still have this very idealistic version of the USA. Since we live here, we don't share that at all. And we're probably more cynical than we should be, but it's because the USA doesn't really stand for anything anymore. But
he's also made a concerted effort to move away from Chinese influence, correct? And really align more with U.S. interests, but specifically to libertarians here, who of course are very anti-Israel in this country.
Yeah,
do you think it's fair of them to ding Milei when he says? And I, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I do think he converted to Judaism. Not that it matters from a choice point of view, but I mean in terms of his character as it's perceived by so-called right libertarians in this country, do you think they're being fair on that assessment? Or do you think, he's a Jewish man who, you know, expresses his support for Israel, but do you think it ends there? Or do you think the right libertarians here have reason to sort of look at him a little askew when he announces or professes that he stands with Israel?
Well, again, I he's not advocated giving any of the taxpayers' money to Israel, and that's the key fact here. I don't know what all of his personal beliefs are. I mean, he was raised Catholic. This is a very Catholic country, and of course, the Pope is an outright communist too. So he certainly called him out on that. I mean, I think also when so many of the people who are opposing Israel are just outright communists. It's not really the best PR, for the Palestinians. A lot of these countries do not have anti-war movements like we do. I mean, or as correctly say, you know, I don't think libertarians oppose Israel. They just oppose foreign aid to Israel. And Israel just happens to be the one that gets most of that aid. So Argentina is not really giving any foreign aid to anybody. I think he's just, you know, he sees the West as better, preferable than, say, dealing with China, which makes sense. I mean, the U.S. has done some horrible things, but, you know, you look at Chinese history and they've been doing horrible, absolutely horrible things for over 1,000 years. They've got everybody beat by a long shot on genocide. So
right,
as far as numbers go, The most genocidal country on the face of the earth is China. And, you know, they've got all these fancy gadgets and all this money, yet they still haven't really changed all that much.
Right.
So,
right.
And unfortunately, I think you do have to kind of kiss the ring if you're in the Western Hemisphere. You can't just come out and say, I hate America, because you never know. America gets involved and stirs things up. Not to mention, you know, too, I know, for example, that Hezbollah has some alliances, you know, with people like Maduro in Venezuela, and Milei absolutely positively hates Maduro. He probably hates Maduro more than anybody. And Maduro is certainly an object of a well-deserved object of that hatred.
Yes.
You know, of course, Petro in Colombia doesn't like him either. And I remember Petro tweeted something out, you know, about how he was so unhappy that Milei got elected, and Bukele and El Salvador said, "Now say it without crying," you know. there's a lot of cases where you see, you know, people, foreign policy is so weird, and you know, sometimes your enemy's enemy is your friend, sometimes your enemy's enemy is still your enemy.
Yeah, you're right. And honestly, that's the part of where, if you're a hardcore anarchist in this country, that's the part you have to resolve, right? Because, you know, it's easy to say, be non-interventionist, keep to yourself and this and that. But there's a reality, you know, we have the benefit of being surrounded by two great oceans and, for the most part, two friendly neighbors to the north and the south. But most nations don't have that luxury, and certainly not in South America. FYI, my producer, while I was stammering there on Malay's religion, did do some quick research, and he's passed me a note that says Javier Milei has not officially converted to Judaism, but he has expressed a deep affinity for Judaism in Israel. He was raised in a Catholic family, but has revealed that he has a Jewish heritage. So I guess whatever the official conversion process is to become Jewish, he has not undergone that, apparently, but functionally, I think he lives as a Jew. So, but yeah,
it's quite difficult from what I hear. You know, it's I don't think he likes Lula in Brazil very well. But you've got to have good relations with your neighbors, no matter who they are. And you know, Brazil is their neighbor. He seems to have good relations with Bukele. He's certainly seems to have. Some people are speculating about his relations with Giorgia Meloni in Italy. So I don't know, but that's they seem to be very happy when they're together, when you see pictures of them.
So, right. Yeah. Well, he like, and again, this is where he and Trump may share some similarity. He does seem to be a ladies' man. So definitely you can speculate on that, I guess.
I would say he definitely is. It's, you know, he broke up with his girlfriend. He had a girlfriend who was a celebrity impersonator, and she would impersonate Madonna. She would impersonate, you know, maybe of Eva Peron. She would even dress up and impersonate Milei. It was quite hilarious, you know, very, certainly various Argentine celebrities. And I guess she was one, her name was Fatima. I guess, I don't know what Fatima has been doing since they broke up, but you know, that's the thing though. He made himself cool.
He's worked himself into the pop culture there, definitely.
Yeah, he got on TV and built a brand going maybe all the way back to 2015. He'd get on, you know, it starts with one talk show and then just goes into another talk show, another talk show. Just sometimes people would come there for the insults, but then they'd stay there for the insights, you know, because you can say things that pull people in, but then you keep them there with, you know, really smart analysis. I mean, he seems like an absolutely brilliant guy. You know,
what would you say? And I know this is total speculation, but I'll ask the question anyway. What would you say are the odds that there's some sort of socialist coup in Argentina?
Because
there is that possibility. Listen, we understand that he's on the right path. We understand that he's doing the right things. He's pulling the right levers. But the truth of the matter is theorists have the luxury of saying this will take 10 years and things will be much better in 10 years. Right. And we can be confident when we say that based on math, economics, history. But the reality is, if you're starving, if your kids are starving, you don't have those 10 years. And what happens in that case, that's ripe for socialism. That's ripe for communism to take hold, right? What do you see there being any realistic chance of a socialist sort of coup down there, saying, "Hey, the people are hungry, they're starving. We need to socialize everything again. We need to go back in the other direction again."
Well, again, you don't seem to understand. The people are better off now than they were a year ago. I mean, things aren't great, but you know, I don't know if they'll lose patience with that or not. I mean, there's, especially in South America, there's always the, you know, the chance of some coup happening, especially if some other country decides to stick their nose into their business. I mean, sure. I mean, the biggest danger would probably come from all the government employee unions, who, of course, they're a problem just about everywhere. And of course, the academics. I think his support is popular enough. I don't know what the kids would do. I think they would probably come out and, you know, raise hell too. It's hard to say. There's always the possibility of that happening, but it seems less likely now than it does. And I think as things get better, you know, because if you try to do a coup or something like that and it fails, coups are very risky. I mean, the payoffs can be big, but you know, if it fails, then you've lost big time too. You know, because I'm old enough to remember, you know, when the 1 week coup happened in August 91 of the Soviet Union, it ended up failing, but there's always a power struggle there. I don't think, but I don't see this will happen. And he's also got the military on his side. I mean, Victoria Vigerell is very pro-military, although I'm hearing there's a divide between them right now, but I don't know how that works. But I know her father was in the war for the Islas Malvinas or the Falkland Islands. So I don't think a coup can happen, but I certainly am not. I would never rule it out for South America.
Well, I was going to say, it's also that region has a history that's how sudden political change takes place, with the exception of Malay. Really, when you have these sudden shifts in political philosophies, it's usually the result of a coup, right? And usually not for the better either. But okay, so overall, then, when someone says, "Hey, Chris, give me your report card grade for Javier Milei," how would you break that down then?
I'd give it. I mean, I'd say it's. I'd say I'd definitely give him an A.
An overall A, and for him to earn that A plus, what's the next thing on the list that needs to get done, in your opinion?
Maybe I just would give him an A plus, just because, like I said, what he had to deal with. I would like. It would be really cool if he tried to push through some type of try to get rid of some of the gun laws, but I don't think that has any popular support there. The one thing I've realized is when the economy is bad, that is all voters think about.
Yes.
They are not thinking about anything else. Right. You need to have a good economy for people to think about other things like gun rights or other things. There's still some issues with crime in some of these areas like Rosario. And, you know, also I hope that he can get more governors on his side, because, you know, the various provinces are still doing various things. I mean, I've heard, you know, some of the provinces are kind of like their own little mini dictatorships for the provincial governor. But, you know, decentralization and getting, I mean, overall, considering what he had to work with and what he started with, I think it's amazing. And I think the most amazing part of all of this is the fact that he's doing a philosophical re-education. Is one, I mean, I've had one guy on my show who says Milei converted him to free markets, and that guy just said he's already won, because he's already getting the intellectual revolution. So even if there's a electoral setback after 8 years, it's still going to go in this direction, because that's because people have that understanding now. I hope this is the case. I suppose the college professors will always be a problem, but who knows? And, you know, I think he wants to get some investment in there. So, because he seems to be hanging on with Elon a lot, you know, maybe Elon will build a gigafactory down there or something like that. It would be cool. And hopefully, you know, maybe Argentina will come up with its own industries. You know, I've often pointed out that South America does not have its own car company. So maybe this would be a place, you know, down in the future where somebody could, you know, just open up shop and say, okay, we're going to you know, call it Patagonia Motors or something like that, and just start a car company.
Build Teslas down in Argentina, yeah.
Or actually, you know, your own company, you know, not offshoot of, you know, because certainly, you know, you got other companies manufacturing there. But yeah, it's a great country, and it's definitely something I've thought about moving to, just because.
It sounds like you've been there a couple of times, right? Is that the case?
I've been there a couple of times. Yes, it wasn't really on my radar at all until this, you know, and then I did a show, and I've done 62 shows out of all these. I've done about 240 now. So it's, and of course I didn't do my first show about Melee until I was at number 80. So it was, but it's been a wild ride. It's really one bright spot in what's been a very dark time in our world. And, you know, I do think also that, you know, if the coronavirus nonsense hadn't happened, I don't know if we'd have had a Melee. I've heard that, you know, they were shut down for 234 days or something like that, which was horrible. The competition for which country was worst is a tough one. And which president or which dictator was worst was a tough one. But, I don't know if anybody's going to do a survey on that, but it's pretty, pretty great to see how it's happening. And I hope that, you know, that they can figure things out. It seems like they will.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, it's very heartening that at least there was fertile enough of an intellectual soil where Belay could plant the seed and prove that it's not crazy to say we're going to cut half the government. We're going to cut 3/4 of the government spending. We're going to eliminate half these agencies, half these ministries. We don't need a ministry of soccer. We don't need that. You know, why are we wasting money on that?
Yes.
As soccer crazy as Argentinians are, right? I mean, that's to say it's a national pastime down there is an understatement. But to be able to just get rid of that and say, hey, we don't need them to play football, right? So I think that, to your point, is a very much a positive, that any electoral setback that comes in the near future or distant future is going to be in history will be overshadowed by the fact that he was able to make this work. And hopefully his works won't be undone by, if not by Milei himself, then by any acolytes of Milei down the road. Right. Because there's a lot of people who come in with good intent, and then, once good, you know, the good times are here, then there's always that itch to like, well, what if we made it a little better by introducing a little bit of government again, by introducing a little bit of increase in government spending? And you know, that's always a reality, right? That, yeah. You know, so it happened in this country, right? So, you know, but let's see if he can get to his finish line. You know, and get unemployment under control, get rid of all the regulations that are holding back entrepreneurs, you know, complete free market and open borders. And let's see what happens. Chris Baker, thank you very much for joining us. Why don't you tell the people your social handles, where they can reach you, when they can catch your show, The Fountainhead Forum, and let's get some let's get your plugs out.
Well, I'm at the Fountainhead Forum. Almost all of my shows are recorded. I've done a few live shows. They were all tribute panels to people who had recently died, but most of my shows are taped. Although I've done 250 shows, you know, since October of 2022. So my schedule's been, I just kind of do them when I'm in the mood, you know, it's or a topic that interests me. I got rather obsessed with Melee. I mean, in September of 2023, I did 25 shows. And, you know, when I can find the people, I'm at Fountainhead FM on Twitter. And my YouTube channel is Fountainhead Forum. I'm on Odyssey, Rumble, and BitChute as well. I need to get on some other sites, and I need to get some swag up because I'm looking to sell stuff to make more money off this show. I mean, I got to tell you, people aren't quite as excited as they were a year ago, but it's still very easy to get people to talk about this. I mean, everybody's, yeah. I mean, you know, of course I'm starting to burn people out, you know, That's another thing I do though, is if somebody comes on episode 97, I don't invite them back till after 147. I don't want to ask people too much. So I have that, my 50 show rule, which I might break, but I you know, and it keeps variety, but you don't want to ask people too much. But it's really been an interesting ride. I've always been asking myself, you know, what can Americans learn from this? And I definitely think, you know, we need the other thing too, is we get rid of the porcupine and replace it with a lion, you know, because that seems to be his symbol all the time, is the lion. I didn't come here to, you know, lead sheep. I came to wake up the lions. It's brilliant. And I hope we can all learn some things from this, and maybe this will be maybe we'll have a much better century than we did last time. I hope so. Cause I was 18 years old when the Berlin Wall fell down. You look like you're older than I am. None of us thought we'd still be fighting the communists now, but we are. So.
Yeah. And that is an interesting point, right? Well, it depends, right? Growing up during the Cold War, it seemed like it would never end. Well, certainly that it wouldn't end without Armageddon, quite honestly. That was certainly drilled into us as youngsters. And I'm just shy of 60. So like, we're not talking the 40s and the 50s when that was drilled into me. We're talking about the 70s, late 70s, you know. And you're right. Like when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Soviet Union fell, was right around the time that I had been turned on to libertarianism as a political philosophy. So that would be, you know, like the mid 80s or so, that when it started for me. And I had a lot of hope, Chris. I got to tell you, like, to me, it's just the opposite. It's like we've wasted 40 years still trapped between whatever we have in this country that's not libertarianism and free markets and voluntarism. So to answer your question, yeah, maybe we can get there. But I think if we just aim to do what he's done, it's like, and, you know, I found that to be very, if not profound, very practical when he said to Friedman, you know, up here I'm an anarchist, but I have to be in office as a minarchist, because that's just the reality that you can't get to anarchism in our lifetime, especially on the nation state level. So, you know, because that would be dismantling its own reason for existing, and that's just not going to happen. Anyway. Chris Baker, thank you so much for coming on Free For All. I look forward to it. And anyone, please go check out his 250 shows of the Fountainhead Forum. And just, I guess, wait when he's in the mood to talk about something. I'm sure he'll talk about Malay again pretty soon. For everyone else, thank you for joining. This has been Free For All right here on the Grumblings Media Network. Please join us again next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, when I'll have another interesting guest on to talk about issues of interest to libertarians. Until then, peace, everyone.